Well, so glad you're back with us at GoldSeek.com Radio for today's Gold Nugget segment with John Williams of Shadow Stats. Well, it's a pleasure to welcome John Williams, head of ShadowStats.com, an alternative economic resource. It's a pleasure to have you back on the show. Welcome back, John.
Thank you very much for having me, Chris.
We have a bevy of topicality to choose from. For instance, we find out that entering a really interesting time in global currencies with China intervening not only in its currency market this week, but as well as its equities market. Then we see surprising volatility coming into the Western world financial markets. Give us an idea of maybe an overview of what you see happening here.
Well, there are several major distortions affecting the system. Number one is the U.S. dollar, and it's, heavily overvalued. And as you see the dollar sell off, and I think we will have that in the not-too-distant future, but it's very difficult to time. But I think we'll eventually face a massive dollar decline, and that will have all sorts of effects in the system, ranging from a spike in oil prices to general debasement in the dollar, much higher gold and silver prices. When I say the dollar is overvalued, there are several reasons behind that. But number one is probably the weakness in the U.S. economy, which is not fully recognized, although a lot of the underlying economic weakness is continually surfacing here. I mean, if you look at what people are expecting in the economy now versus what they were looking at the beginning of the year or last year, it's much weaker. I'll contend that we're actually in a recession, a new recession. I mean, if you want to get into the background detail, I'll contend that we never really recovered from the economic collapse that took place from 2007 into 2008, 2009.
I think your work is the only work that I've seen that quantitatively supports that comment. I mean, if we take a look at the ShadowStats GDP numbers, we have, with very few exceptions, the GDP has remained in negative territory since the internet implosion bubble of the year 2000.
Well, there are two versions. The one you're talking about there reflects adjustments for changes that they made to the assumptions on the GDP and the things that they've added into it to help adjust it over time, or to add growth over time. Well, let's get to the GDP reporting for a moment, because that is the broadest measure of the economy that's published and one that is looked at definitively by many people. You go back over time, you'll find that the variety of changes have been made where new areas have been added to the GDP, defined into the GDP. For example, this last time around, they added in a category for intellectual property so that the value of the copyright of someone in Hollywood who makes a movie is now added into the GDP. The changes they made the last time, they figured it at about 0.3% to the annual growth rate. Well, when they make those revisions, they not only add them in, but they restate history going back in time, all the way back to 1929. What happens there is what I call Pollyanna creep, because they put in all these happy items that are going to increase the numbers now, and you look back and the numbers in the Great Depression improved because of the changes in assumptions that they're making today. And if you go back, you'll find that you get a general upgrading of growth in the GDP each time they go through a round of these gimmicks. And if you take out the gimmicks, you'll find that the economy indeed has been in contraction since the dot-com bubble burst. But there's another area which is, I mean, allowing all the general reporting gimmicks that they've added, such as the intellectual properties. You have a basic flaw in the system in terms of how the inflation is used. The GDP as with most economic statistics, is viewed net of inflation. The idea being that if, let's say you look at retail sales out for July showing 0.6% monthly increase, that's before any consideration for inflation. And you really need to take out the increase in prices over the last year to see how the physical volume of retail sales is going. Well, although the headline inflation numbers are understated by at least several percentage points, you know, 3 to 7%, putting all that aside, given the official numbers, you're probably going to see about 0.2% increase in the CPI for July, which means that that 0.6% increase was 0.4%. GDP, same thing. It's adjusted for inflation, but there are elements of the inflation there that are significantly understate inflation in terms of current numbers, about 2 percentage points. In the GDP, that's separate from the consumer price index. There are different inflation factors involved. The problem with using too low inflation and deflating an economic statistics is that the result is the inflation adjusted number, what they call real growth, is overstated. With roughly a 2 percentage point overstatement in the current GDP, what you'll see is that as the economy collapsed into the middle of 2009, which is the official trough, and then, as I show the official numbers, it just recovers from there, and by 2011, it's hit a new high versus where it was before the recession, and is now maybe about 8% above, 9% above the pre-recession peak. But if you correct for this the understated inflation, what you see is that the economy plunged into 2009, and then instead of recovering, just has been bottom bouncing at a low level of stagnation. And you see that pattern in other series, and I'll contend that that's a reality. So that as the economy is now turning down again, you'll see that the what will eventually gain recognition as a new recession is really still part of the economic collapse that we went through back in 2008 and 2009.
If we do return to those levels, well, it would certainly be quite a shock to the system. How would you expect our officials to respond?
Well, they're not going to recognize that it's been as weak as I've shown, because they're not going to change the inflation reporting. Every year they revise the GDP numbers. With that, aside from the gimmicks that they've added in, they tend to have upside positive assumptions built into most of their statistics. Then they'll benchmark them a year or two later, and the benchmarks almost always are negative because they're benchmarking against solid numbers, or at least more accurate data. And we just went through a GDP benchmark revision that knocked down the growth in 2012 and 2013. Once you get into the era where they don't have new and better numbers, they still have all their positive assumptions in it, and it picks up. But right now, 2012 looks like we had a no growth, probably a recession, as it would be formally viewed eventually, the last half of 2012. 2011 never really got revised. And the reason that didn't happen was because of the government shutdown in 2013. That delayed the reporting of some of the numbers that got into the most recent benchmarking. But in the most recent benchmarking, they started the benchmarking in 2012, not 2011. If they had done 2011, you would have seen a recession in 2011, much weaker growth. And so what we're beginning to see here, and they're not going to revise the 2011 numbers now until 2018, when they go into one of those grand scale revisions and add in all new modeling, like the intellectual properties. That's when they tend to make those changes. But what we'll be seeing at that point in time is that the economic recovery has really been, although their numbers will show some uptrend because you're not adjusting for the inflation, that there have really been multiple dips, sort of multiple dip economic collapse. And in terms of where we are right now, consider some of the better statistics are showing outright recession, industrial production. That used to be the recession, that used to be the GDP measure. It's contracted in both the first and the second quarter of this year, quarter to quarter. Normally, two GDP contractions would be considered a recession. That did not come out of the benchmark revision. I thought it might, but the that doesn't mean it isn't a recession. My goodness, the severe downturn that we had started at the end of 2007 wasn't recognized as a recession until the end of 2008. Here we had another downturn that started the end of 2014. It'll get recognized probably by the end of the year. But industrial production's contracted quarter to quarter. Annual growth of the retail sales. The first quarter retail sales contracted. Those types of growth patterns are not seen outside of recessions or immediately preceding a recession. You look at the S&P 500. That's a fairly broad indicator of corporate America, domestic economic activity when you look at the sales, the revenues. What you've seen is the revenues have contracted first quarter and second quarter, both quarters, so far in 2015. Again, that doesn't happen outside of recession. Last time you saw that was during the economic collapse. Same thing with those retail sales and industrial production numbers. The economy is turning down. That's with the reasonably good quality numbers. The not so hot numbers, such as the housing statistics, are going to catch up and catch up with that as well. But my reason for mentioning all of this is underlying the strength in the U.S. dollar has been generally a presumption that the U.S. economy is recovering and it's growing, and not only growing but growing strongly enough to enable the Fed to start raising interest rates again. And that has been a big factor behind the strength in the dollar. Aside from relative economic strength or perceptions of same, relative interest rates are very, very important in terms of the currency's strength. So that what happens as the economic statistics weaken, is that the perceptions begin to wane that the Fed's going to raise those interest rates. That's what happened yesterday with the Chinese devaluation, that there's an expectation there that maybe the Fed's not going to be raising rates and the dollar weakened. It's going to get a lot weaker as economic statistics surprise the market. And that's where you start to see some of the big changes in underlying markets, commodities, and such. That's where you see the debasement of the dollar, and eventually you'll be seeing higher inflation. And the reason oil prices are headed back down again is because the dollar strengthened. But you look at what happened yesterday as the dollar was weakening, oil prices and gold and silver prices rose. The strength we've seen in the dollar in the last year is an absolute canard. If you look at the what changed, where all of a sudden the dollar, which was not too far off its historic low, that everyone would want to flee to it. Well, there's some issues in terms of some liquidity problems in the euro area, which I'll get back to, but primarily what happened was the Russians were doing things with Ukraine that the United States didn't like, and the U.S. imposed financial sanctions the end of June against leaders there. But it's also fairly obvious that there was some covert action, because within a day or two of the headline actions against the officials, the oil price began to plunge. And along with that, you were seeing a big rally in the dollar. My contention is that was largely manipulated as a way of putting financial stress on the Russians. And that, as that began to unfold, people were looking for reasons for the dollar to rally. Oh, strong economy, economy's recovering. Well, we, if you go back then, we had booming growth, 4 or 5% annualized GDP. That's nonsense. And that'll become obvious in the next, probably the next benchmark revision. But it wasn't that far back in time that they'd get it this time around. But there were all sorts of manipulations that were done. The I think the Fed really needs to raise interest rates. It's not a healthy circumstance. But the the strange thing here, or the perverse thing here, they never lowered the rates to stimulate the economy. You go back to the panic of 2008. The federal government could not allow the financial system to collapse, and indeed was on the brink of collapse. I kid you not, no one in Washington was kidding about that. We were at the brink of systemic collapse. So the federal government did everything that they had to do, spent whatever money, they lent whatever money, they guaranteed whatever had to be guaranteed, prevent a collapse in the system. But all the things they did just bought them a little time. They didn't do anything to solve the underlying problems. They didn't do anything to address the economy. They didn't do much to address the banking system solvency. They certainly did nothing to address the long-term solvency, sovereign solvency concerns that the rest of the world had with the United States and their tremendous budget deficit when you look at it, using gap accounting and unfunded liabilities. None of that was addressed. And then we had the Fed, in order to provide liquidity to the system. You have to keep in mind that despite the Fed always mentioned, oh, we have a congressional mandate to make sure there's adequate economic growth and contained inflation, that they have, but their primary responsibility is to keep the banking system afloat. If the banking system collapses, the rest of it doesn't make too much difference, because you're not going to have an ongoing happy economic system. So that what they did with their quantitative easing was basically aimed at supporting the banking system. But as that became increasingly unpopular politically, they used the weakness in the economy as political cover for what they did, saying, oh, we're doing this to stimulate the economy. You get that now going back and forth. It's sort of like Janet Yellen and her people are playing a bad cop, good cop with the markets. And it's, oh, the economy's too weak, or, you know, it's the economy strengthening and strong economy, we're going to raise rates. Weak economy, we're going to keep them low. If they wanted to raise rates, they could do so, and it wouldn't make too much difference at this point, because the stock market and the currency markets are already anticipating that. I don't think they're going to actually do that, though. I don't think they're going to raise the rates, because the economy is going to be getting worse, not better, in the months ahead. And as that happens, the markets will basically write off a Fed raising rates. But as the rest of the world looks at it, that's relative weakness for the dollar, and you're going to see a movement out of the dollar, massive move from the dollar. The situation in Greece that has helped to hurt the euro relative to the dollar, or there maybe have been some flight to the dollar there, is, there's some legitimate currency movements there. But the problem is the United States really is not much better than in much better basic financial condition than Greece. When you look at the way we've handled our the federal commitments to the money it's going to spend in the future and our ongoing deficits, that's a big problem. And people say, oh, it's not going to have that much effect on the dollar. Well, what they forget is that back in 2011, when Standard & Poor's downgraded the credit rating of the U.S. Treasuries, we had a currency panic. The dollar was in a massive sell-off, and all of a sudden there was all sorts of jawboning and intervention. The jawboning was basically aimed at saying, oh, nothing wrong with the United States, the problems in Europe, and a lot of focus was put against the euro. They try and knock the euro down to help prop up the dollar on a relative basis. The Swiss, at the same time, pegged their currency to the euro, and in the process, helped to support the dollar, helped to prop the dollar. Now, the problem with intervention is that if the markets are going against you, and that's generally why you intervene, it becomes very expensive to move the markets the way you want. The Swiss had to give it up early this year. But there's another country that was looking to enter the global financial markets, currency markets, the same par with the dollar, and that's a Chinese yuan. It's effectively been pegged, but it has had a trading band around it for some time. And if you go back to when they went off a fixed rate, which was back in 2005, you look at how the currencies have done since then. The currency that has been the strongest against the dollar, it's up a third or so from, or excuse me, it's about 40% from 2005 to date, the Swiss franc. But so is the Chinese yuan. Now they're removing their peg. It becomes very expensive. Yes, what's been happening is the artificially strong dollar, and they've been trying to keep up with the dollar, has pulled their currency higher and made them less competitive against the rest of the world, where the major currencies such as the yen, the Australian dollar, the Canadian dollar, the British pound, all have been weakening. So that I can understand why they did what they did. The problem here again is the dollar is distorting the global system, and that's what will the markets will force a correction with that, and when it does, that's when you start to see some reality turning to the commodity markets, and again, sell-off in the dollar will be reflected in much higher oil prices, much higher gold prices, much higher silver prices.
I would appreciate your thoughts, though, on the potential for higher rates. For instance, many top analysts are expecting now a September increase of a quarter point in the benchmark lending rate, as well as perhaps another quarter point increase at the December FOMC meeting. If we also read into the minutiae of some of the Fed's literature, it's clear that the Fed governors are interested in increasing rates as high as 2.5% to even 3%. At least that's what they say on paper. Do you think this is a canard? Are they bluffing?
I can believe they'd like to do that, but I think they're bluffing. I mean, they're playing games back and forth. I mean, you'll see reports like that, and then all of a sudden, one of the Fed bank presidents or board members will make a statement in the other direction. That's deliberate. Those are people manipulating the market. They don't want to see the stock market crash, and they're afraid that if interest rates go higher, that stocks will crash. They see the stock market as one of the few things that's propping up the economy. Well, it's not. The economy's in trouble. I think I'd go ahead and raise interest rates, but I don't think they have the courage to do so. And again, as I said earlier, I think at least that September rate's already priced into the stock market and the currency market. You have a problem with the low interest rate is that it kills people on fixed incomes. You can't get a safe livable return on your money with 0% interest. I mean, if some people used to be able to go get 4 or 5% on a CD, can't do that. You can't buy a treasury bill that gives you a return greater than the rate of inflation. I mean, that's nonsense. That's a horrible investment environment and discourages a lot of activity. Another factor is that with higher interest rates, the banks have greater profit margin potential. They can increase their margins, and with higher margins, they have the ability to lend to riskier accounts. and in the process that increases lending. One thing that has not happened here is normal growth in bank lending. That if you'd had normal growth in bank lending, you could have had something of an economic recovery. But the low rates have kept it under wraps. So I think those are reasons that they would like to see higher rates. There are others who say, oh, the rates go higher, it's going to kill economic activity. Well, it'll tend to boost mortgage rates, although there's some pretty good margins still there. And that may have some effect, indeed, on housing demand, which isn't real strong, despite all the headline numbers. But for businesses, high rates are not a detriment, usually, in terms of activity. All they do is build the cost into their product. It tends to be somewhat inflationary. But on balance, I think the economy would be doing better with higher inflation than no inflation. But again, from the Fed standpoint, they're afraid of what's going to happen to the stock market. They've created this really phony debate about, oh, my goodness, if the economy gets better, then we can raise rates. So that's how they build expectations. And that's become a driving factor in the financial markets. I don't think they've got maybe wrong on this, but I don't think they've got the courage to go against that, particularly as the economy should be turning down the next month or so before the next FOMC meeting. And with that, the Fed's been under a lot of criticism in Congress. You're coming into an election year, you get some congressmen questioning the Fed chairman about how can you raise interest rates as the economy's heading into a new recession. It's a question she can't answer, honestly. But sum and substance, my bet would be they don't raise the rates. But even if they do, at least that first one's discounted.
As we wrap up here today, John, tell folks more about the services you provide at shadowstats.com, what they can find, and any other contact information that might be handy.
Sure. Well, the best bet's just to go to our website, which indeed is shadowstats.com. On the homepage, right-hand column, top of that column, you'll see a series of articles that describe where I think we are, why I think where we are, and you know, where things are headed. Because as the dollar, once we get a massive decline in the dollar, we're then going to be looking at a much higher inflation circumstance, one that I believe will roll into a hyperinflationary environment. That's there for the looking at. I have alternate measures on inflation, on unemployment, where I've worked out estimates based on the way numbers used to be reported and why the let me put it this way. I find very commonly that most people think the economy is weaker than is being reported, and that inflation is stronger than is being reported. And in terms of common experience, they're right. The reason it's that way is because the government's changed its methodologies over time, basically to put in stuff that spike economic numbers and depress inflation. So I have estimates of the CPI and unemployment there on again for public viewing as to where it would be if the government had not made all its changes in methodology. And I do have a weekly newsletter, which if people are interested in, they can subscribe to that. You can see the headlines on that in the left-hand column. And you usually get out a couple of newsletters a week, depending upon the economic data being released. Always welcome new subscribers, but there's a lot of material there for non-subscribers to get a sense of what's going on.
John Williams of ShadowStats, what a wealth of information. Look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks, Chris. Thank you for having me.